Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. Today's guest creates some of the most extraordinary artwork I have seen. She is Deborah Band. Deborah's work in Hebrew illuminated manuscripts draws upon her love of both the manuscript arts and Jewish tradition and learning. She holds a BA honors in history from Concordia University in Montreal and an MS in political science from MIT, and has worked in Hebrew manuscripts since 1987. Descended from an eminent rabbinic family, married into a family of scholars in modern Hebrew literature, her extensive studies of Jewish texts and research into medieval European and Middle Eastern painting and manuscripts inform her work. Jewish Publication Society published her first two illuminated manuscripts, The Song of Songs, The Honeybee in the Garden in 2005, I Will Wake the Dawn, Illuminated Psalms in 2007, and she published Arise, Arise, Deborah, Ruth, and Hannah in the latter two, collaborating with Arnold J. Band. Kabbalat Shabbat, The Grand Unification, a collaboration with Raymond P. Shenlin, with contributions by Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sachs and Arthur Green, will appear in September 2016 from Honeybee in the Garden, LLC. In addition, her work includes illuminated and paper-cut ketubah and other works in group exhibits, private collections, community institutions, and galleries across the English-speaking world. Her original paintings of The Song of Songs and Psalms have toured the United States and Canada. Deborah works extensively with the Women's League of Conservative Judaism and the Jewish Orthodox Feminist Alliance. She speaks regularly across the United States and Canada at diverse Jewish and Christian venues, ranging from synagogues to academic conferences and seminaries and the Library of Congress. Apart from her work in Hebrew manuscript arts, Deborah is involved in medical ethics review, and she participates as a lay member in the Neurosciences Institutional Review Board of the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. Deborah has lived throughout the United States and Canada, and after many years in California and New Mexico, resides in the Washington, D.C. area. And one look at her work compelled me to share her with you. So let's get started. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you.
It is wonderful to be with you, too. Prior to On the Air, Deborah and I discussed many similarities that we have, birds and cats and mothers and our interest in healthcare. So before we talk about your art and your books, since I'm involved in the healthcare world, I'm interested to learn more about your work in the medical ethics review and with the National Institutes of Health. Tell us about that.
Sure. The artwork is not my first career. Actually, I was in healthcare management and administration in the early days of the HMO world. So that plays into this sort of sideways. But the real means by which I got into this is that my very sweet, beloved first husband, David, who is a magnificent astrophysicist whose work plays into this Kabbalat Shabbat book in a huge way. David was diagnosed late 2001 with a very, very rare spinal cord cancer and was treated by the neuro-oncology group at the NIH for the 7.5 years of his disease. And I learned my way around patient care very, very well over just the first couple of years of this ordeal. And consequently, after a couple of years, I was asked to join as a lay representative. I was asked to join the Neurosciences Medical Ethics Board. And by statute, these organizations are required to have lay membership on their panels, on the review panels. And where they can, the NIH likes to get family members or past patients to participate because they know their way around, they know the issues in the way patients are treated in the course of research protocols. So David actually passed away 7.5 years ago, but I've continued on the board, and it's a very important part of my life. It was my way of giving back.
Absolutely. What a blessing that you turn some of that tragedy into help and encouragement for others. And I'm glad that they do allow lay people, because talk about the patient experience. Well, the best way to learn is from the patient or the family.
That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. Yep. And I learned my way around very, very well. it's been a fascinating experience to participate in this.
Well, you and I have to talk more about that at some other time, because today I would like to explore what it is that you do and talk about exploring. That's what you do. You explore the power of the visual image to express the readings of biblical manuscripts and their significance across Jewish cultures. Explain this medieval art form of illuminated manuscripts.
Ah, okay. Illuminated manuscripts have just been a matter of enchantment to me since early childhood, when I was the first thing I wanted to do as a child was either to be a book illustrator or a veterinarian. So now I illuminate books, and I'm surrounded by my menagerie.
You did it.
You and I had discussed. Illuminations are a fascinating medium. First of all, I should define illuminated manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
This is a book that people are acquainted with the medieval Bibles and the books of hours, the Psalters, that include not only handwritten, hand-calligraphed text, but surround the text with paintings in full color and gold and silver illuminations. And in the Jewish tradition, these also include paper cutting, which is a Chinese art form that Jewish traders probably brought back to Europe sometime between the fall of the Roman Empire and the 13th century. So they're just enchanting. These are a fusion of words and pictures, and it's a very visually sensual art form, and it enables me a chance to do a real visual interpretation of not only the text, but the whole swirl of related issues in the text. I go back into rabbinics and archaeology and modern biblical criticism, and in my newest project into cosmology and physics and biology, to come up with the ideas that expand on the text so that the paintings that I'm doing are not only visually luscious to look at, I'm not only creating a book that's a sensual joy to hold, but it comments on the whole swirl of ideas around the text at hand.
And you used the perfect words. You're using words like enchantment, infusion, and swirl, and visually luscious and sensual, and yes.
It's great fun. I love what I do every day.
Oh, exactly.
I wake up in the morning and look forward to going to work.
Oh, my gosh.
About 12 steps down from my bedroom.
Yay, there you go. And you can stay home with all of your buddies as well.
You got it.
Oh, what a life you have. So how did this art form come to interest you?
Oh, boy, that is so long ago. When I was a kid going to museums, the postcards that I would always take home with me were either Monet or pictures or photographs of illuminated pages. The year after it began to take hold seriously, the year after I was first married, I was working at Harvard across the street from the Fogg Museum, which at the time had mounted a show of medieval Persian manuscripts that I just fell in love with. I was there every day at lunchtime and on many Sundays pouring over these pages. And then in college I had studied a degree of art history. I became completely captured by the writings of a very important medieval art historian by the name of Erwin Panofsky, who sort of laid out the notion of disguised symbolism in medieval painting, particularly Jan van Eyck, who was a mid-15th century Flemish painter. He worked in Bruges. The work is fascinating. Take one van Eyck painting. It's a very famous painting of a marriage between the kids of two Florentine banking families in Bruges in the 1440s. And what you see is a perfectly normal, little stiff, but otherwise perfectly normal looking scene of a young couple holding, a richly dressed young couple, holding hands in front of their richly appointed bed, and it looks like perfectly. There's a little dog, and there's a bowl of apples, and there's a chandelier. All this looks perfectly normal. But Panofsky taught us how to parse every element in that painting, and lots of other paintings. I mean, this was the way things worked in Northern Europe, and of course in Renaissance Italy as well. And if you parse this painting, what you see is this multi-layered moral and ethical and even romantic marriage contract between this young man and the young woman. There are so many layers that you only understand when you think about each of the perfectly workaday items in the painting. And that just fascinated me. Then, when I was pregnant, this is a silly domestic story, when I was pregnant with my older son and needed to do his birth announcement, of course, heaven forbid I hire someone competent to do this. Instead, I was going to do it myself. I did not yet know how to do Hebrew calligraphy, although I'd been writing Hebrew since I was probably 4 years old, well before I learned to write English. And I used old-fashioned Hebrew letter set, the old stick-on film lettering, to do his birth announcement. I was royally ashamed of myself for resorting to that stuff. And when I was pregnant with my younger son, I started studying Hebrew calligraphy, and so that I could do his birth announcement more competently. And everything just came together. I discovered paper cutting at the same time, and I think it was on my youngest son's birthday that my first pieces went into a museum in Berkeley for a short informal display, and I shortly afterwards started taking commissions to do ketubot, to do Jewish marriage contracts. And it's just been a wonderful trip ever since then.
Wow. So what kind of training did you have to prepare you to become so accomplished, or were you mostly self-taught?
I do have art training. I did serious art school at the High Museum in Atlanta as a teenager right through high school. I started college in studio art, but This was the mid-70s, and everything was loosey-goosey, with no requirements, no kind of formal training, and I knew exactly that I wanted a very, very formal art education. I was bored out of my mind, dropped art school, and instead did medieval history, Jewish studies, and art history.
Okay.
I'm self-taught in pretty much everything that I do now, so that's... But it's not that I didn't have any training before.
Okay,
I have haunted the docents of medieval scriptoria in England and demanded to see technical manuals and all that kind of thing. So, but yes, I studied Hebrew calligraphy, but other than that, I'm pretty much self-taught.
Wow, just amazing story.
Thank you.
Now, time-wise, how much time does it take to, say, finish one manuscript, would it be?
Yeah. Oh, okay. If you look at my books, I do the paintings in pairs.
Right.
In sort of the spread that you would see in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Each painting is done on very, very fine calfskin vellum that I get from a scribe, actually, in Israel, in gouache and gold and obviously calligraphy. I need to use silver. It's actually palladium, since that doesn't tarnish. I budget around a week per spread of paintings, per pair of paintings. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it's a bit less and I get to start the next set. Sometimes it takes longer, and that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow. I would have thought it would take much longer than that. Just so much.
I'm a pretty efficient worker.
I could tell.
And I know what I'm going to paint before I sit down to paint.
Okay. All right. So what does this work offer you, and what do you hope that it offers the recipient?
Ah, what an interesting question. What does it offer me? Great fun to begin with. I mean, this business of coming downstairs every morning and sitting down and and playing with these absolutely luxurious materials with a more or less disciplined set of ideas that I'm trying to express. I mean, this is just so much fun. I also love the research process. Each of my book projects usually gets a year or two of solid study before I start playing with paints and inks and parchments. So it's intellectually, it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Physically, it's very satisfying. It's mm-hmm. centrally, it's very satisfying, mm-hmm. these things coming together. What I hope it will, there are many things that I hope mm-hmm. will offer the audiences. First, obviously, complete aesthetic absorption and pleasure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope they have this sort of visual, sensual pleasure at looking at the paintings, just as an art. Beyond that, spiritually, there is so much richness in these projects. Each book has had a very different intellectual challenge to it, and it's that challenge that I'm trying to get across to the reader. For instance, in my first book, in the Song of Songs book, the challenge was to integrate a straight literal reading of this short biblical book. Literally, it's straight erotic love poetry. But every religious tradition, Judaism, since probably well before the first century, quite possibly several hundred years before that, had a whole set of allegories that Jewish tradition has felt that the painting expresses. All ideas about the love between God and Israel. And there's a whole history of that I'm not going to go into now. But the challenge was to integrate the literal, romantic, erotic readings with the allegory. Mm-hmm. With the new book, the Kabbalat Shabbat book, this has been an absolutely fascinating intellectual trip. And the challenge there has been to integrate the ideas in this very mystical services. Most of the formal prayers in it are biblical, are either directly out of the Bible or very closely related to Bible. And then there's a whole literature of songs that have also developed out of it. But the way it's all put together is very mystical. It was developed by a famous group of Jewish mystics in 16th century northern Israel in the city of Tzfat. I think Tzfat is the English pronunciation. And what I've tried to do here is integrate that with because this whole service is a celebration of the creation of the completion, rather, of creation. And what I'm trying to do is fuse that mystical and religious understanding of creation with an absolutely contemporary, very serious, this is not fluff, very serious understanding of creation coming out of cosmology and astrophysics with a fair amount of biology tossed in as well. This is my first husband's influence coming out. Mm-hmm. So, does that help you?
It does help. And this newest project will be out in September, is that correct?
Uh-huh. Day after Labor Day.
Okay. Are you done?
Oh, absolutely. It's in print. The very first formal book talk after publication is the day after the pub date, September 7th, at the Library of Congress.
Wow, I'm going to talk about your speaking in a moment. How many years have you been doing this?
Altogether?
Yeah.
About 30 years. I began this project about a little over three years ago.
Okay. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, let's see. My God, that's like choosing among children.
I know.
I think there are two. If I really had to pin it down, I can come down to two favorites.
Yeah.
One is the pair of paintings around the Friday night Kiddush. This is the Friday night blessings over the wine, which are one of the chief several ways that Jewish tradition welcomes the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
The other is a medieval prayer called Beloved Soul, which is something of a love song to God, and very, very beautiful. And the paintings in them, doing this visual interpretation, allowed me to introduce huge arrays of ideas out of that, not only taken directly from the text themselves,
mm-hmm.
but out of Bible, out of physics in the Kiddush paintings, out of Pythagorean philosophy that underlies mathematics, just all kinds of things. In the Yadid Nefesh and the Beloved Soul paintings, there is lots of romantic imagery. There's imagery drawn out of an interesting intersection between medieval Spanish Jewish poetry and Bible and modern biology. So it's just, and I've got the entire book of the Song of Songs done in micrography, mm-hmm. running through those paintings, and I can put them up on the webpage.
Okay, excellent, excellent. This is intense.
I'm sorry.
I love it. No, I.
There's just so much. It's like trying to get things across in just a few minutes is a little bit like haiku.
Exactly, and words just don't have the power to do it justice either. I love the one of the oak tree and your grandmother in the story that about that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm, that
thank
touched
you.
Me.
So one of the oak tree and my grandmother, that is an ode to the perfect woman, as it were. It's called, in this wonderful new translation, it's called A Powerful Woman. And it's actually the last 22, I think, verses of the biblical book of Proverbs that describes an image of the woman who is perfectly virtuous, the perfectly wise woman. It was included in the Kabbalat Shabbat liturgy because of the mystical metaphor of wisdom, comparing wisdom to a woman. I actually have a whole talk about this, mm-hmm. and it's a fascinating idea. And the night that my grandmother passed away, and my grandmother and I had been intensely close. She was a remarkable woman. Mm. My grandfather was a very, very prominent British rabbi. She was his wife and had a full career in community leadership alongside with him. Mm-hmm. And we just adored each other. The night she passed away, I stayed up all night. There was no way I was going to sleep. I stayed up all night and created a piece around this same text for my mother to have, and she still has it on the wall of one of the spare bedrooms in their home in Montreal. And it used the same oak tree imagery, because although I didn't know any of the symbolism at that point, I had not studied this at all. My grandmother was the oak in the family,
mm-hmm.
so that's why I imported that idea into these paintings. That up on the website as well.
Yes, good. I felt your love when I viewed that and saw that on your site.
Thank you.
Well, now, what is the significance of honeybee in the garden?
Yeah, I get lots of questions about that. Okay, the name Deborah is the Hebrew word Devorah, which is the ancient and modern Hebrew word for honeybee. So my first book, my Song of Songs book, I set the poems in a walled garden, which is a very interesting metaphor that we won't get into right now. And I interpreted the whole poem as the pair of lovers daydreaming about one another within a walled garden. Now, honeybees belong in gardens. So there was a tiny little honeybee on each page of the book, And I ended up naming my LLC, my own publishing company, Honeybee in the Garden, which had been the subtitle of the Song of Songs.
Right.
And there was a funny story about that. Shortly after I moved to Washington in 2001, I took the then unpublished manuscript pages of this book down to the Library of Congress to show to the then head of the Hebraica section, and Michael Grunberg. And it was very, very funny. He had me take the all 60-odd paintings back into the conference room at the back of the Middle East and Africa reading room, and had me lay all the paintings out along a set of long sort of board tables. And then he pulled a jeweler's loop out of his pocket.
Ooh.
And I was terrified, going to start looking for mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd only met him once very briefly before. And so he put on the loop and started looking very, very closely at every page. And I was horrified and started explaining all the symbolism in the paintings. And he said, "Don't worry, you don't have to explain this to me. If anyone in the country reads this book, I will. Right now, I just want to look for the honeybees."
Oh.
So I did not do honeybees in the Psalms book, but they are in Arise, Arise, and the New Kabbalah Shabbat book.
Oh, my gosh. I knew there was significance there. That's why I asked.
So there's this little Where's Waldo game. And with the first book, with the Song of Songs book, my younger son, who was then, just before Bar Mitzvah, so I guess he was 11 and 12 when I was working on that, it was his job to tell me where to put honeybees.
Oh. So he was part of that process.
Oh, my kids have been very much part of the process.
I bet. Wow, they should be so proud of you.
Actually, I think, shockingly enough, I think they are.
Yay.
They're even telling me that these days, which is even more shocking.
Isn't that nice?
Wonderful.
It is
wonderful. It rarely happens.
Exactly.
They're both very, very accomplished young men.
Well, I'm sure with a mom like you, how could they not?
My daughter-in-law is an absolutely wonderful woman, and it's very, very nice to be able to make them proud.
Oh, beautiful family.
Thank you.
Yeah, so tell us about your talks and some of the topics you offer.
Let's see. One that I've given a few times and I'm booked to do again several times over the next year is a talk that I alluded to briefly before about the figure of wisdom personified as a woman. It's really fascinating. I trace it from its biblical roots. And actually even pre-biblical, this comes up in Canaanite, in Ugaritic poetry, and I trace it from its biblical roots and look at the different meanings of wisdom and how these become applied to woman. It's especially striking all over Proverbs, actually. And then take it into Jewish mysticism and show how the idea of the Sabbath bride or the Sabbath queen, which is a really important metaphor in Jewish tradition, how that came about. So it's great fun. And whenever I talk, I accompany the talk with slides, and it works out wonderfully.
Oh, I bet.
Another one that I'm about to do, because I'm asked questions about this all the time, is about how different aspects of my life feed into the work.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm just working on now. That's going to be my book launch talk.
I thought to ask that question today as well, but we'll save that maybe for another conversation.
That'd be lovely.
Yes. Now, I want to just touch upon your Jewish marriage contracts, because people can commission you to create some of these stunning contracts for them. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm just finishing up one now.
Are you? And no two are ever alike.
This is true. Mm-hmm. I start absolutely from scratch with every couple. I mean, I do have limited edition prints, and now one dealer offers all digital prints of my designs. Mm-hmm. But what I really love to do is start absolutely from scratch with couples and design a piece that's very much about their own lives and interests. I mean, there are, I know other artists who sort of have a few basic designs that they tinker with a little bit for different couples, and I just totally disagree with that. Mm-hmm. There are only so many moments in a normal lifetime, in the normal upper middle class lifetime, where you commission artwork. And so I really want this to be about the couple, about how Jewish tradition can relate to their lives, about what gets them up in the morning.
Right, right.
And it's great fun.
So folks can contact you there, and we'll get all that information next. So what's next for you? I know you're finishing your book in September. It's coming out, but what else is going on?
Well, this one comes out in September, and I've got a fairly heavy, wonderfully heavy schedule of speaking engagements over the next year and a half, pretty much. Mm-hmm. I'm booking right now. And the next book project, Ketubot, always go on, please God. The next major book project is going to be the Book of Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, which has been a fascination to me for many years. Mm-hmm. And that's a major one. There are a couple of smaller ones that are not really at the point where I can mention them, but
okay.
Ecclesiastes is definitely going to happen.
Well, good. We're going to keep our eye out for that. So is there anything that we missed that you would like to talk about?
Okay. So people will often ask me, why is it worth spending the time to do illuminated manuscripts?
Mm-hmm.
To me, a lot of that comes from, as I look at my kids in the world, and my first grandchild is just about to be born, please God, and as I think about the future, we live in so increasingly visual a world in our internet age. You know, a little tiny square with rounded edges now, you know, is the symbol of an icon, and you see it popping up everywhere. Why do you see it popping up everywhere? Because it just subliminally, that little square reminds people of something that's going to bring them fun or utility. Just that little shape.
Mm-hmm.
There's been the thing in the news over the last few days over Donald Trump campaign's peculiar use of a six-pointed star in an ugly ad.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they use the six-pointed star reminds people of Nazi imagery, of the Nazi Jewish star.
Mm-hmm.
And so just that simple, basic geometric shape has such power.
Right.
And we are in such a visual age. And the way I go about choosing my imagery from this, you know, 3,000-year-old ocean of biblical and rabbinic text, archaeology, and so on, to me is the way I pull imagery out is a powerful way of keeping my audience connected with Jewish tradition. I can go to a talk, and people who are already familiar with my work will see a pink lily, and they'll know from my early work that that relates to a rabbinic tale about the Ten Commandments.
Okay.
And it's powerful to me, and that matters. And this is one of the things that I love.
Oh, such passion. This has just been such a pleasure to have this conversation with you.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to speak with you.
Oh, my. Where can folks now go to learn more about you? Where can they purchase your books and view
okay.
your amazing artwork?
The one-shot answer to that, books are available on Amazon, first off. But the real one-shot answer to see everything is to go to my website, which is www.dbandart.com.
All right.
dbandart.com.
dbandart.com.
Yep, and everything is there.
Everything is there. And just for sensory overload, let's head over to dbandart.com. Deborah, this has been a blessing for me. I'm so, so honored and pleased to have had this conversation with you, and I look forward to more.
Oh, I would love to. This has been great fun. It's lovely. Thanks a lot.